afternoon. You are listening to KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM and HD. We're also streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. It's currently 37 degrees outside. We had a little wintry mix falling here earlier. I think it's still coming down. Currently, the wind is out of the south at 9 miles per hour. Wind chill is 30, and it looks like we will have scattered rain and snow showers this afternoon until about 3 p.m., and then it'll become mostly sunny, with the temperature falling to around 28 by 5 p.m. South winds 20 to 25, becoming west 25 to 30 in the afternoon. We could still have some gusty winds this afternoon, although it seems a little calmer now. Tonight, a slight chance of snow showers between midnight and 3 a.m., then clear during the early evening and later becoming mostly cloudy. Looking ahead to Friday, decreasing clouds with a high near 30, and partly cloudy Friday night. Saturday looks like a nice sunny day with a high near 30. Coming up in the midday report, Anchorage police are investigating an officer-related shooting. There's a new chum study happening about Western Alaska chum salmon. Kenai may soon have a four-day school week. All this and more.
In Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. The UN Security Council is to meet tomorrow following an urgent appeal by the Secretary General, who warns of a potential catastrophe in Gaza. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports that the Palestinians and their Arab supporters want the council to call for a ceasefire.
Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for the meeting, warning that the conflict has created, in his words, appalling human suffering. He says civilians in Gaza face grave danger, and he wants the Security Council to help avert a catastrophe. Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour wants the council to pass a resolution calling for a ceasefire. The U.S. and Israel oppose such calls. They don't want to see Hamas left in a position where it could attack Israel again, as it did on October 7th. The U.N. Secretary General has spoken with Secretary of State Antony Blinken, as well as with Arab foreign ministers who are visiting Washington. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
House Republicans are moving ahead with a vote next week to approve an impeachment inquiry into President Biden. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports some moderates who were hesitant are now backing the action.
This fall, then-House Speaker Kevin McCarthy directed three House committees to launch an impeachment probe, but skipped a House vote because of splits inside his party. Now, Speaker Mike Johnson says approving an inquiry is a necessary step. Nebraska Republican Don Bacon, a moderate who had reservations before, says he will back the resolution next week.
When the president refuses to provide documents like he did last week, and said because you don't have a formal inquiry, that forces our hand. I think it's just that simple. And I can defend an inquiry. I can't defend an impeachment right now.
Bacon says he thinks impeachment should be rare and there has to be a very clear high crime or misdemeanor. Democrats say Republicans have no evidence of wrongdoing and are just doing this to provide cover to former President Trump. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, the Capitol.
Investors are watching for key signals about the job market this week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports unemployment has inched up in recent months, but remains low by historical standards.
The Labor Department is set to report tomorrow on November's job gains. Amid signs the U.S. job market has cooled a little bit. Earlier this week, the department said job openings were down at the end of October, but layoffs are still rare. New claims for unemployment benefits showed little change last week, as 220,000 people applied for aid. Stock in Google's parent company got a lift today after the company launched its most advanced artificial intelligence offering yet. The AI model is called Project Gemini. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
At the close, at last check, the Dow up 62 points, the S&P also up about 36 points, and the NASDAQ up 193. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The first results are in for one of the biggest experiments in fighting global poverty. A charity has been giving thousands of villagers in Kenya a cash grant of about $50 every month for 12 years, with no strings attached. NPR's Nurit Eisenman reports.
A team of economists has been studying this effort ever since the U.S.-based charity GiveDirectly rolled it out in 2017. They're comparing the beneficiaries to a control group that got no aid, as well as to two other categories, people who got the monthly income except with the promise of just 2 years rather than 12, and a group that got 2 years' worth of income but in a lump sum. 2 years on, everyone who got cash was better off on measures of well-being, like consumption of protein. But those who got their money in the lump sum were far more likely to start a business. Nurit Eisenman, NPR News.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is vowing to press on with his efforts to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda. He says he has a new plan to override a UK Supreme Court ruling that struck down the immigration policy as illegal. Sunak is facing a revolt from members of his own party. Britain's immigration minister has now resigned. The House has voted to censure Congressman Jamal Bowman. The New York Democrat set off a fire alarm in a House office building in September. He says it was an accident, but Republican colleagues say he was delaying a government shutdown funding vote. Bowman pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor and agreed to pay a fine. I'm Kristen Wright, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Fisher Investments. As a fiduciary, Fisher Investments is obligated to act in their clients' best interest. Learn more at fisherinvestments.com. Investments in securities involve the risk of loss.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
Anchorage police say an officer fired on a wanted man yesterday afternoon at a Midtown hotel before he jumped out of a window. Police did not publicly identify the man, who was injured and arrested. No officers were hurt in the incident. Anchorage Police Chief Michael Curl said at a news conference last night that police had learned a man with a felony warrant was at the Hilton Garden Inn. Officers responded, set up a perimeter, and surrounded the hallway outside the man's room. Curl said a police negotiator called the suspect, but he disconnected and opened the room's front door.
The suspect entered the threshold of the room with an object in his hand and what appeared to be a shooting stance. One of the officers that were in the hallway fired his weapon at least one time.
At that point, Curl said the man retreated into the room and jumped out of a second-story window. Medics took him to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries to his upper body. Curl said it wasn't initially clear whether the man was struck by the officer's gunfire, sustained injuries from the jump, or both. Police said officers also found a woman in the room with facial injuries, which she told the officers the suspect had caused. The incident is under investigation by police as an officer-involved shooting, with the officer on 4 days of an administrative leave before being publicly identified. The State Office of Special Prosecutions will examine the incident before officers with the department's Internal Affairs Unit conduct a review. Amid alarming decline in Western Alaska chum salmon, scientists have pointed to warming ocean temperatures as a prime culprit. A newly published study sheds further light on the role climate change may play in the salmon crisis. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
For newly hatched Western Alaska chum salmon, there is no time to waste when it comes to making their way to the open ocean. The tiny fry begin their journey just days or weeks after being born. When they finally reach the Bering Sea, sometime from mid-June to mid-July, their first priority becomes consuming marine prey and building the energy reserves that will carry them through their first winter. Throughout their years in the ocean, Western Alaska chum travel extensively between the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska. Unfortunately, simultaneous warming trends in the Bering Sea and the Gulf appear to have come as a double whammy for Western Alaska's juvenile chum salmon. A new study by scientists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game shows a possible link between a period of exceptionally warm ocean temperatures and chum crashes seen across Western Alaska.
loss of sea ice is having an impact on Bering Sea ecosystems. And so with warming, we're seeing a change in the food web.
That's Ed Farley, lead author of the study and a program manager with NOAA Fisheries Auk Bay Laboratories in Juneau.
That food web is less energetic. It's a poorer quality prey, and it's impacting juvenile salmon, especially juvenile chum salmon in the northern Bering Sea. It's impacting their fitness prior to winter.
By poorer quality prey, Farley means jellyfish, also known as cnidaria. They have been shown to proliferate when ocean temperatures warm.
There are more cnidaria in the ecosystem of the northern Bering Sea during warm years, but there was significantly more during this most recent anomalously warm period.
From 2017 to 2019, Bering Sea ice receded to record low levels thanks to persistent warm southerly winds. In addition to bringing lower quality prey, the study finds that a six-year period of warmer ocean temperatures in the Bering Sea that began in 2014 may have also increased the metabolic rates of chum, increasing their need to feed. While the chum grew in size, they remained poorly equipped for survival.
Even though they were large and they were relatively abundant, they had very little fat.
Farley says relative abundance of other juvenile salmon species in the Bering Sea, like Chinook or pink salmon, usually correlates to how many will eventually swim back upstream. But that wasn't the case with the lean chum observed in the study during the six-year warm period. Instead, record-low chum salmon returns have hit Alaska Native communities hard in recent years, especially those along the Yukon River. While the new study looks at the fitness of juvenile chum during their first summer in the Bering Sea, Farley and his colleagues have also looked into the fitness of juvenile chum wintering in the Gulf of Alaska. Farley says that waters in the Gulf were unusually cool in 2022.
We are seeing real differences in their energetic status and some of the other metrics that we're starting to look at now.
While cooler waters in the Gulf of Alaska may bode well for Western Alaska chum salmon returns in the short term, Farley says long-term projections regarding ocean temperatures are less than rosy.
By 2040, you know, at least the climate model suggests that the northern Bering Sea will not have sea ice in the winter. And so I think that what we have just witnessed is some of what may be occurring in the future.
Farley says it's hard to predict how ocean temperatures may change in the coming years.
It could be that it warms up in the Bering Sea, but the Gulf of Alaska stays okay, but it's hard to say. I think what this study does is it gives context to the impact of climate change and warming in these northern Arctic and subarctic ecosystems and the relative impact that that's going to have. And so it can be huge.
Farley says major recent advances in ocean modeling may provide a clearer look at chum migration patterns in the future, whatever way the temps trend. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
A 4-day school week could become a reality for Kenai schools. On Monday, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District Board of Education approved a temporary committee to investigate the benefits, challenges, and feasibility of a truncated school week. Board Vice President Jason Turanen is behind the push for a 4-day week. He worked in the district for 15 years before running for the board and says his experience working at Nikiski Middle School and High School inspired him to research a shortened school week.
Well, I just saw that we constantly, Fridays were just a day when a lot of kids were absent because of activities. So it really sort of hampered what teachers could do in the classroom.
He began researching 4-day school weeks in other districts around the country.
You know, I saw some articles about this, and I thought this was a good way to sort of help increase attendance during the time when instruction was taking place, and also as a way to potentially save a little bit of money, because the districts that did it, they all saved a little bit of something. Sometimes it was little, sometimes it was a lot, depending on what kind of measures they put in place to reduce expenditures through payroll.
4-day school weeks are a reality in 25 states and 900 districts. In states like Colorado and Missouri, a majority of school districts follow a shortened schedule. Turanen says he's aware of the primary drawback of the short week: parents who work on Fridays and rely on schools for child care. He says a possible solution is bringing in support staff on Fridays.
Other districts have utilized support staff to work on that day, to have tutoring programs. Teachers would have the option to work on that Friday for work day, and maybe it wouldn't be every day of the month, but like at least a couple to be able to do prep time so that we don't do a big pay cut for support staff.
Turianen says a four-day week could possibly involve an extra 45 minutes of instruction time on Monday through Thursday, and possibly an additional week added to the school year. But he says it will be up to the newly founded committee to research what would work best for the district. The temporary committee will begin meeting soon. It includes two school board members, two district administrators, and three union representatives.
Just excited about the opportunity to gather with some colleagues and research this more and see if it's something that would fit, is at least a viable option for something that could fit with our district. And I'm hopeful that we will be able to move forward with that and then have discussion with parents and students and staff and community and say, hey, do we like this? Is this something we want to do?
The board approved the four-day school week committee unanimously. The committee will present its findings in July 2024. Flying Alaska Airlines is a ubiquitous part of life for many Alaskans. And for some, December brings a very Alaskan tradition, the mileage run. That's a last-minute trip people make to top off their miles to make the airline's elite status next year. This year, Alaska Airlines has an alternative to the mileage run that they're pitching as better for the climate. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George looks into how green it really is.
Abby Query grew up in Juneau, and she knows how to make the most of flying Alaska Airlines.
My mom got me into all the Alaska Airlines programs. I've been a Mileage Plan member since I was three, so I've had a lot of time kind of learning about using this system to our advantage as Alaskans.
Query keeps a close eye on how much she's flown every year, because if she hits 20,000 miles, she qualifies for elite status. As many Alaskans know, that comes with certain benefits: easier booking, better seats, sometimes even upgrades to first class. Small perks, but Query says they add up if you're in the air a lot.
It just kind of makes the whole flying system nicer, and when you live in Southeast Alaska like I do, you fly a lot to go anywhere.
And often Alaska is the only airline available. This year, Query was just shy of reaching elite status, so she booked a trip to Nevada to go rock climbing with friends. This status-earning trip is called a mileage run, and Query is not alone. She's heard of people just flying to Seattle and back the same day to top off their miles at the end of the year. But she knows all that flying and burning all that jet fuel has a downside. Aviation accounts for 2.4% of global annual CO2 emissions, and that number is growing, according to a 2021 study.
It does have a really big impact on the environment, and it's sometimes hard to fathom just because it's such a normal part of our life. But, I mean, my carbon footprint is larger because I went on this trip.
Alaska Airlines knows mileage runs are a habit for Alaskans who care about their reward status. This year, in an effort to cut down on these superfluous flights and the carbon impacts, they made an offer to their members. Instead of booking a flight, they say you can earn miles by buying something called sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF. SAF is basically jet fuel that isn't a fossil fuel. It's not a product of oil drilling. Instead, it's usually a biofuel made from plant and animal material, anything from waste cooking oil to manure to crops specifically grown for fuel. The idea is it should add significantly less carbon dioxide to the atmosphere when it's burned. Andrew Chen is an aviation expert with the clean energy think tank Rocky Mountain Institute in Colorado. He says it's really hard to cut emissions from planes, but SAF is the best solution we have right now, besides just flying less.
It is the most viable solution today for decarbonizing aviation. The challenge is that we don't make or use or buy enough of it.
SAF is still in its infancy. There's no big industry producing it. It's expensive. And Chen says it won't be able to compete as long as fossil fuels remain cheap. But Chen says it's an important tool, and he sees Alaska's offer as a creative way to spread awareness, because a lot of people still haven't heard of SAF.
I think on that aspect alone, it's fantastic to engage your, you know, public and passenger consumers.
But is it actually better for the climate than your mileage run? That really depends on how the SAF is produced. Alaska Public Media made repeated attempts to reach Alaska Airlines to ask about the climate benefits of the program, but the airline couldn't make a spokesperson available before broadcast time. In an emailed statement, the airline said it sees SAF as its best opportunity to reach net zero goals, and it's working to grow the SAF market to make the fuel more affordable. On its website, Alaska Airlines offers a calculator for customers to determine the carbon footprint of their flight. For example, a round-trip flight from Anchorage to Seattle produces 760 pounds of CO2. The airline says that spending $200 on SAF would more than offset that carbon impact, which is roughly the same as driving your car from Seward to Dead Horse. And you'd earn 1,000 elite qualifying miles at the same time. But it's not entirely clear all the money paid into this program would go toward the direct purchase of SAF. On its website, the airline says the funds support programs including carbon offsets, which can vary widely in how much they really benefit the climate. As for Abby in Juneau, she's a little skeptical about how much climate value the program might actually have, but it does make her think harder about flying.
What is the cost? What is the impact of what we're doing? Because we see the Instagram pictures and the tans from this, but maybe not necessarily the extraction process and you know, the impact it's having on the planet.
Query, who hadn't heard about SAF before, says travel is a big part of her life, and if there's a way to lower the environmental costs, she's interested. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
A research plot at the Georgeson Botanical Gardens in Fairbanks has been planted with hazelnuts. The research will track the survivability and productivity potential for interior Alaska. KUAC's Robin reports.
As Alaska's climate changes, growers like Josh Smith are able to take advantage of longer seasons and warmer growing zones.
I grew up in North Pole, and I got used to people telling me that you can't grow this here, you can't grow that in North Pole, it's just too cold, and in Fairbanks. But I started to realize, even as a kid, that the extremes that I read about in the 70s, the 80s, I wasn't necessarily seeing those in North Pole.
Smith has been growing things since childhood, and he wanted to try planting crops that have never grown here before.
With climate change, I'm like, well, I kind of want to experiment, try some new crops, especially getting more people talking about food security in the face of climate change.
And now one of those experiments is hazelnuts. Definitely not a crop you associate with Alaska, but Smith says they're pretty resilient. Smith learned about them after joining the Air Force and was stationed in North Dakota.
I got to see the possibilities of what could be grown in a cold climate with short, intense growing seasons.
When Smith returned to Alaska, he brought some North Dakota hazelnuts with him and sprouted them in his home in South Central Alaska. He's becoming known as a plant hobbyist and even has the email name Alaska Plant Guy.
So I post a lot of my goofy plant experiments, like my English walnuts, my sweet cherries. I post them on Facebook. So I nerded out talking about experimental fruits and nuts.
He got to be known at the Matanuska Experimental Farm, and they offered to host an experimental plot of hazelnut trees. Smith's North Dakota hazelnuts were bred in Zone 3. Zone 1 is the coldest, like what we have in Fairbanks. The plants aren't really trees. They top out at about 15 feet as bushy shrubs. They take about 8 years to produce nuts. Each plant produces both male and female blossoms, but they don't self-pollinate. So you need multiple trees if you want to produce nuts. The project at the Matanuska farm is called the Future Crops Initiative. They planted 150 hazelnut trees there last July.
I grew a bunch of extras because I wanted to make sure I had enough for that project. Well, it turns out I had almost 50 to 60 extra hazelnut plants.
Well, what does one do with extra plants? One brings them to the Tanana Valley.
There's so many microclimates from your zone 1 down the valley floor where it gets negative 50 to negative 60 every year. There's some areas that banana belts up in the hills where it doesn't even get below negative 35. So there's a whole slew of microclimates. And with these being zone 3 hazelnuts, I'm like, there's bound to be some that are going to survive somewhere in Fairbanks.
The Georgeson Botanical Garden is on a hill at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, which makes for a good experimental plot. In September, Glenna Gannon, Assistant Professor of Sustainable Food Systems at UAF, and Katie DiCristina, the garden's manager, planted two plots separated by about 100 feet in elevation.
Now it's a matter of figuring out hazelnuts are made of tough enough stuff to survive in Fairbanks.
With any luck, there may be hazelnuts to consume in a few years. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
How much should drugs cost if the government helped create them? I'm Novosoffo with the Marketplace Minute. The Biden administration is proposing to seize patents on drugs it believes cost too much if those drugs were developed with the help of government-funded research. A law enacted in 1980 may give the federal government this power, but it's never before been exercised. Initial claims for unemployment benefits held steady last week at 220,000. The total number of people collecting jobless benefits declined from a two-year high, totaling 1.86 million. United Auto Workers says it's reached the threshold to hold a unionization vote at a Volkswagen plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The UAW is trying to unionize auto plants outside of the Rust Belt. I'm Novosoffo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Thank you, Marissa. It is currently 32 degrees outside. We have light, snow, fog, and mist. The winds have picked up and are now out of the west at 12 miles per hour, gusting to 25. And we are looking for scattered snow showers this afternoon as it becomes gradually mostly sunny, with the temperature will start to fall to around 29 by 5 p.m. South winds 20 to 25, becoming west 25 to 30, gusting as high as 45. Chance of precipitation is 50%. Tonight we have a slight chance of snow showers and then clearing in the early evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low around 23. West winds 25 to 30, decreasing to 15 to 20 after midnight. Winds could still gust as high as 45. And mostly cloudy ahead for Friday with a low around 21. Today is Thursday, December 7th. The sunrise this morning was at 9:38 a.m. and sunset tonight, or this afternoon rather, will be at 4:25 p.m. That gives us 6 hours and 46 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 9 seconds over yesterday. The record high on this date in 2019 was 48 degrees, and the record low was minus 1 in 1970. Taking a look at the marine synopsis, a 997 millibar low, 40 nautical miles south of Cordova, moves inland at 1,006 millibars by Thursday afternoon. A 996 millibar low enters the Gulf at 80 nautical miles southwest of Homer late Thursday morning and pushes northeastward. Its front wraps over the northern Gulf Coast through Friday afternoon. In Chiniac Bay, we have a small craft advisory today with west winds at 30 knots and seas at 5 feet. Tonight, west winds 20 knots, seas 3 feet. For Marmot Bay, small craft advisory through tonight. West winds 25 knots, seas 3 feet, building to 6 feet in the afternoon. Rain showers. Tonight, west winds 25 knots, seas 5 feet, and freezing spray. For the Shelikof Strait, there is a small craft advisory through tonight. Today, west winds 30 knots, seas 8 feet, widespread rain showers. Tonight, west wind 25 knots, seas 7 feet, and freezing spray. Taking a look at the Kodiak District tides, we have a low tide coming up at 4:21 p.m., right around sunset, and that'll be a 2.3-foot tide. High tide coming up tonight at 10:08 p.m., that's a 5.8-foot tide. And on the west side for Larsen Bay, the low tide is at 4:57 p.m. this afternoon, a 3.4-foot tide, and the high tide at 10:40 p.m., a 9.9-foot tide. A few community announcements, and then we will go to our spotlight. The Salvation Army's Doing the Most Good program, providing Christmas baskets and toys to Kodiak kids from lower-income families, is gearing up to get the giving going. Qualification appointments will be taken from December 4th through December the 8th. To make an appointment, call 486-8740. At your appointment, you will need a picture ID for all adults in your household, an ID for each child, rent receipt or a rental agreement, a proof of income, and proof of physical address. Bethlehem Experience. There's a free entrance to this experience. It's an indoor event at Kodiak Baptist Mission, happening December 8 and 9 between 5 and 7 p.m. and December 10th at 12 to 2 p.m. You can experience the sights, sounds, smells, and taste of the city of Bethlehem at the time of Jesus Christ's birth this Christmas season. The entire family will want to attend, with plenty for everyone to do and see. Friday, December the 8th at Kodiak College, it's the Kodiak Audubon's Winter Birds of Kodiak, presented by Robin Corcoran. It'll be in the Benny Benson Building, which is in rooms 106 and 107. The doors open at 6:30 p.m. Kodiak Audubon's annual membership meeting and gearing up for the Christmas bird counts. That's what this thing is. Open to the public. They'll have door prizes and free pizza. For more information, you can contact Cindy Trussell at 907-486-2878. The St. James the Fisherman's Church's annual holiday miniature quilt show and bake sale takes place on Saturday, December 9th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Enter your miniature quilts for show or sale by Friday, December the 8th at 6 p.m. at St. James Church at 421 Thorsheim. Quilt dimensions should be close to 20 by 20, and best-in-show quilters may enter up to Quilters may enter up to five quilts, and there's an entry fee that applies. Entry forms can be emailed to you for your convenience. Please contact Ellen Lester at 907-942-3868 with any questions. Angels of Love is a program where you can place your loved one's name on an angel for display at the hospital holiday trees. It's displayed in the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center from November 25th through January 13th. You can honor the life of someone you miss, celebrate the life of someone you admire. It costs $10 donation for each angel, and you can do that online at kodiakhospitalauxiliary.org using their donate button and email the names of your loved ones by using their contact button or email address, which is kodiakhospitalauxiliary@gmail.com. All donations support the Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary's Health Care Career Student Scholarship Fund.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.